So we're going to look at nature. I'm recording, which is why I suddenly went into a more formal tone. We're going to look at nature. When we talk about nature, what we basically mean is the kind of the way the world is organised, and that immediately links us back into the role of the gods and into ideas of destiny and fate that we looked at last time. But it's a slightly different look at the same issues. When we talk about nature today, what we mean is the kind of the world outside and around us and the way that's organised. And we often talk about things like disturbing nature or corrupting nature. We often use the feminine, it's an ancient pagan idea, but the feminine idea of nature as a goddess, Mother Earth, Mother Nature, we often talk about. And the idea that we have is that nature in itself has a kind of a system and an order, and that if we disturb that, then we're in trouble. And that sounds a bit kind of new agey, airy fairy, but actually we think about it all the time. We talk about the environmental damage caused by our burning of fossil fuels and our lifestyle. And there's this, behind it all is this kind of idea that nature is stable, and it has a system to it and a balance to it, and that what we've done as humans is to destroy that balance of nature. It's interesting, actually, because any geological or scientific kind of survey of the human planet, of the Earth, will tell you that actually it's never been stable. But that's a topic for a different time, a different day. Not that I'm saying that we shouldn't be responsible. But what we're talking about there is a system. Now, when we look back at Shakespeare's times, Renaissance times, we see conflicting views of nature, and we've talked about these already. In a sense, but we see conflicting views of nature. There's the orthodox view of nature, which of course is that God is in control, that everything has its place, everything has its position, and nature, the natural world, has a structure and an organisation to it. And of course it's called the great chain of being. And that view of nature, that view of the world around us, gives a very clear idea of where we are, of how to behave, of how to treat other parts of nature, and about the status quo that we should look to preserve, status quo, the way things are, that we should try to preserve. That view of nature believes that if you keep things in the right order and if you allow things to return to the right order, the right structure, then the nature, because nature is God's instrument, will be a healing force and will put things right. So we see that view a couple of times. Gloucester says at the start that things are going wrong because nature is all at war with itself. He talks about the eclipses and the sun and the moon having put nature out of balance. And then when Lear is mad on the heath, just before he's taken to Dover, he's sleeping. And I think it's Kent who says we should let him sleep because nature will be a balm. That's the word they use. Nature will be a kind of healing force and will restore him back to himself if we just let nature, give nature time to work. And then towards the end, when Lear meets Cordelia, Cordelia says the same thing, and the doctor who's helping Cordelia says the same thing also, that if we just leave, let nature take its course, let nature restore him, then he will return to himself again. It's this idea that there is a natural order of things, and if we give it time and if we give it space, then nature will restore itself and will turn everything back to how it should be. And as I said, it's a view that we still today hang on to. When people are stressed or they're feeling under pressure, what do they often do? They often go out to take a walk in nature, they often go to the beach, or they go to a quiet place somewhere out in nature by themselves, because we have this kind of inbuilt understanding that if we're left alone in peace with the world around us, then that's a kind of restoring thing. It's a good thing for us. That's a very orthodox view of nature. As I say, it's still a view that we hang on to today, by and large. That nature is God's instrument. It has a place. It has a this kind of structure, the great chain of being, and that if we leave it be, if we let it, give it time, it will restore itself. Then this is other view of nature, expressed by characters like Edmund and Goneril and Regan. And this links again to this idea of destiny, but it's this idea that actually there is no such thing as an enforced system of nature, that actually nature doesn't have any structure to it other than the structure that we impose on it ourselves. When Edmund is giving his soliloquy the first time we really meet him, other than right at the start, first time we really meet him, one of the lines he says, "Now nature, thou art my goddess." But of course he doesn't mean that same view of nature that we've just been talking about, that characters like Gloucester and Lear and Cordelia might subscribe to. When he says, "Nature, thou art my goddess," he means something different, clearly, because by that view of nature, he's right down the pecking order, isn't he? Because he's an illegitimate son. The great chain of being puts him right at the bottom. So we have to ask, what kind of nature does he see as his goddess? And what becomes clear is that he sees nature as a place that's free of rules and free of systems, and a place where he is free to make his own path. This is Edmund, when he's giving his soliloquy, you know, wherefore base, why for bastardy, why they brand us with base bastardy. You know, he's arguing or exploring this idea of why am I any less than anybody else just because I'm illegitimate. He seems to see nature as a place free of human rules and free of systems. And although he predates Darwin by several hundred years, in a sense, and you need to be careful with this in an essay because it's not Darwinian, but in a sense, his kind of view of nature is survival of the fittest. It's the strongest survive. Those who have got the most about them survive. And you need to be careful about that in an essay, because in Shakespeare's time, no one would have understood the idea survivor of the fittest. It wasn't an idea, you know, Darwin was several hundred years later. But it is that kind of idea that he and Regan and Cornwall and Goneril all subscribe to. Think about what Edmund says. He says things like, well, I'm just as strong, I'm just as intelligent, I'm just as good-looking as Edgar, why should I be any less? In other words, his view of nature is a view where it's to do with your strength and your intelligence. That's what gives you advantage in nature. to link to the context a minute, we talked about Machiavelli a while ago, that his view of nature is very Machiavellian. Remember Machiavelli, a philosopher and thinker who believed that it was important that you did whatever you needed to do to keep hold of power if you were in power. It's an idea, this view of nature that Edmund and Gonal and Regan hold, that's explored, and it's particularly explored when King Lear sees Edgar as poor Tom on the heath. Do you remember that line? He looks at him, he's all but naked, poor Tom, and he looks at him and says, "Is man no more than this, a poor, bare-forked animal?" And we'll look at the script in a couple of lessons time, but he goes on a little bit. But the basic idea is, he said that when you strip man down, actually he's no more than the animals. He's no more than the cats and the dogs and the horses and everything else. This is man. And it's that very, very unorthodox view of nature. That actually there isn't anything that makes man any better than any other animals. There's no reason why man should be better than any other animal, other than that he's stronger and that he's cleverer. But there's not any system. There's no idea of a structure of nature. It's just the strongest and the fittest. And it's an idea that Lear returns to again right at the end when he carries Cordelia out dead. I'm paraphrasing here because I can't remember the exact quote, but he says, why should a cat have breath? Why should the animals of the fields have breath? Why should they live and not Cordelia? And it seems like, well, it is the thoughts of a grieving father, but it's more than that, actually. It's a really deep philosophical question. Is what right do we have to life any more than the animals have right to life? I'm not suggesting there was a great vegetarian agenda going on in King Lear, but it's the beginnings of that train of thought. It is, of course, the train of thought that animal welfare groups and people who don't eat meat for moral, ethical reasons would say exactly. You know, why do we as humans have any right to kill animals for our food? And if you just think about the thinking behind that, it's this, isn't it? There's no kind of preordained, there's no reason why we're more important than them, other than that we're stronger, we're cleverer, but that doesn't give us the right to kill. But the flip side of that would be a kind of understanding that as humans we do have the right to kill animals for our own use, because somehow in the created order we're higher up than they are. Okay, so two views of nature. Any thoughts or any questions about that? Okay, good. We'll stop that recording.